Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Boom, what up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. The Doug Gottlieb Show is broadcasting live and direct from sunny Southern California. I got picks for you. I got guests for you. I'm sure I have more reads from NHTSA, right? People love those NHTSA reads. Listen, they wouldn't be doing a public service announcement if people weren't dumb enough to stop when they see the train lights. Like, don't cross the tracks. We got Bill Belichick commenting on social media. Oh, that's a good one. Ooh, Jeff Schwartz will join us. John Middlecoff will join us. And in 20 minutes, Steve Palazzolo will join us. Pro Football Focus senior analyst. We'll get you ready for a huge weekend in the NFL. That weekend began last night with a somewhat historical matchup, right? Anytime Washington takes on the Giants, there should be some takeaways. You know what's interesting? And I don't know if anybody else has brought this up. I continue to, and I'll get the, why are you picking on Cam? I'm just trying to make a point that so many people who cover the NFL are disingenuous about it, and fans of the NFL just don't know any better. Familiarity is the biggest reason why people change jobs or change teams, right? Do I know you? Do I know how you work? Do I know your system? Do I know what you do and how you do? Your job, my job, any job you want, right? Like I have a really, really dear friend who used to be in one field and then took over he's the president now of a major, let's just say entertainment organization. And then you look at over the last 6 months, the guys and women that he has brought in, and you're like, oh, he's surrounding himself with his boys and with his ladies, with his friends. And of course, that's par for the course, right? I mean, how do you think I got to Fox Sports Radio? Colin's my guy, and the guys running the show are my guys, and let's do it. Let's go to a different place. Let's do it together. They know how I work. I know how they work. It's great. So when you watch Washington play and you realize that over the past 2 years, 2.5 years, they've had multiple opportunities to sign Cam Newton for minimum money, right? Like even Taylor Heineke, you signed a 2-year deal. It's like 2 years, like $8 million. Like that's backup quarterback money. By the way, a little bit more money than they paid Cam Newton to stay in New England. You watch Taylor Heineke play and you're like, well, whether or not he's great or a long-term starting quarterback, I don't think he is, but he's good enough, and he's like the perfect backup. He's kind of undersized, not making a bunch of money. He can run around. He can make plays. Yeah, he got a little lucky on the interception last night, like all of those things. But you start to realize that no matter what Ron Rivera says about Cam Newton, like that ship has sailed. Heineke was with him in Carolina. He brought him over. Kyle Allen was Cam's backup and then replaced Cam when he was hurt. He traded for him and brought him over. Cam's done in his eyes. You couldn't get a better setup than a short-term starter with minimum money. And they're like, we prefer Taylor Heineke, who, by the way, was better last night than anything Cam did all of last season, including the Seattle game, which is like his one game where he played really well throwing the football. That's just the reality of the sport. It's like Tony Romo said when Dak Prescott took his job because Romo was hurt and Dak played so well. Football's a meritocracy. Doesn't care about your feelings. Here's Taylor Heineke on getting his first NFL win.
First start was, 2 or 3 years ago in Carolina? Threw 3 picks, tore my tricep. It was just a brutal thing, and that was my last start until last year, Tampa. Come in Tampa last year, had a good game, but ultimately fell up short, and then finally get that first win. So it's nice to get that weight off your shoulders, and hopefully we can keep the ball rolling.
Now here's Ron Rivera on how Heineke bounced back from that late interception.
The thing that was real impressive about him was the way he bounced back after the turnover. You know, prior to that, you know, he went down in what, three plays and scored a touchdown, and then we turned around and we were trying to kill the clock. You know, he made a bad read, he made a bad decision. He should have put the ball in the back's hands, going to the flat instead of trying to throw the curl. And, you know, James Bradbury made a heck of a play. And but, you know, getting that opportunity, he stepped up again.
I don't even think Heinicke played in the XFL when he was in the XFL. He was an emergency quarterback and last year, of course, gets his first win. His last time he started was against Tampa in the playoffs that he talked about, and they lost a fairly competitive game. Tampa goes on and wins the Super Bowl. By the way, Dexter Lawrence is getting eviscerated by people. If you watch the replay on social media, you realize that he wasn't actually even offsides. Nonetheless, here's Joe Judge on his defensive lineman jumping off sides on what was a missed field goal.
I'm not going to put this on Dex, and I don't want to put this on Dex. Okay, Dex's a good player. He's a strong piece of our locker room. He's a good teammate. He's fun to coach. He's productive for us as a player. I'm not going to put this on Dexter Lawrence. Okay, there's things we all have to do better as professionals, but I'm not going to put this on any one player or one situation.
Smart coaching, right? Smart coaching. And oh, yeah, by the way, when you watch the film, you'll realize that he wasn't actually off sides. Watch the replay. Guy named Alex Wilson, who is the founder of Empire Sports Media. Guy in New York, he shows the replay, and clear as day, as the ball moves, that's when Dexter Lawrence moves. And it is one of those things where we sit here and we'll sit here and say, like, gosh, replay is really tedious. And it does take away from the excitement of the game where you score a touchdown, but wait, we got to go review every touchdown. You get an interception, we got to review any interception. You recover a fumble, we got to... On the other hand, are you familiar with the least reputable evidence in a criminal trial? Do you know what it is? Okay, the least reliable form of evidence is eyewitness testimony. It sounds bizarre, right? And you're like, well, because what lawyers will do, and they're smart, is they throw out scientific numbers and they're like, well, 97%, that means there's 3% chance that it's not accurate. 97% in scientific form is actually considered a fact. Science leaves the opportunity there for a very, very strange outlier there. And the older we get, the more we learn about science, the more we realize that it was like the OJ trial and DNA and things like that. 1 in 10 million is actually a statistical fact, not the proof of some outlier there or some other guy that we don't know about. But the least reliable form of evidence is eyewitness testimony. And that's what Dexter Lawrence was found guilty by. Because when you go to the replay, he ain't offsides. He just got a great jump. A perfect jump. And look, I'm with you. I'm watching the thing and I'm like, bro, you're right next to the football. How can you jump? You know, I played football as a kid. I was telling my son this. When I was 7, I was far and away the littlest guy on the team. So they actually played me at the defensive line. I played nose tackle, just like kind of the same spot, like right there in the A-gap as Dexter Lawrence. So I'd be a 4-point stance. And when he snapped the ball, I'd try and just get through because I was smaller and quicker and just grab the quarterback's ankles. And a couple of times a game, it would work. And what you know about playing that position is all you got to do. You don't have to listen to anything else. As soon as the ball moves, you're free to go. And I'm sitting there going like, how the hell does he jump offsides? Then you watch the replay and you're like, wait a second. He wasn't offsides. All right, so what's the net? What's the takeaway? Heinicke strikes me as a Fitzpatrick type where he can run around, he can throw, but he is little. And when you're little like that, there are times in which you're going to make throws. You're going to have to guess a little bit. You're going to have to try and be smarter than coverage, and that's not always going to work out. Like, he was a journeyman for a reason. Long term, I would guess they'll figure him out some. And Washington is in one of those years where they just need a quarterback to try and score him some points, especially if they can get a lead, because that defensive line is still filthy. But two games in, they are very precariously close. They are a Darius Slayton drop away from being 0-2 on this year. The Giants, I don't know. That was I thought for Daniel Jones, I thought that was a pretty good night. And they're using him in smart ways and allowing him to run. And look, I even think Jason Garrett's got to go to more of the RPO game, which worked for them early and they went away from it late. But it's still a figuring out process. And I'm not as down. I mean, look, they lost everyone's favorite offensive lineman to a terrible injury last night. But as they continue to fix that offensive line, like, I don't think the Giants are that far away. They were obviously bad in week one. It's a disappointing loss in week two, especially one that you got to feel like got away from them. But considering they're going against an elite pass rush, to be able to have Daniel Jones make plays and be in position to win a game, I'm not as down on the Giants as other people are. Now, you got to find ways to win those games, but not. And I love what Joe Judge said. I'm not going to put it on Dexter Lawrence. You might put it on Dexter Lawrence in private because those are the mistakes. Those are the little things, the game of inches that cost you game. But when you watch the tape, you're like, you know what? He's actually the victim of eyewitness testimony, which is not totally accurate.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Oh, don't you love Bill Belichick press conferences? We're on to Cincinnati, right? He was asked about social media. Here's Bill Belichick's comments.
Really know or care anything about social media. I don't even know what's out there or isn't out there. So that's irrelevant to me. We played football before there was social media and didn't matter then either. I think anytime you have a team that we all rely on each other, we're all accountable to each other, and we all support each other, and we all make mistakes.
Yeah, so talking about social media and saying we've played before social media, we'll play after social media. I do think that's really, really fair. I actually do. What we make the assumption, you know, there's a rule in broadcasting. Rule in broadcasting. Don't assume. Right? Don't assume. Like, I make the mistake in the opening segment of assuming that you watch Thursday Night Football. That is a big assumption. That's a big assumption. So I obviously we don't. We try not to, so it's more in generalities. I do think you know by now. You know, you're talking about 13, 14 hours after the game. You know who won the football game. You know the basics of Dexter Lawrence probably jumping off sides or being called for jumping off sides, allowing Washington to have a second kick, a closer kick, after missing a kick to win the game. Like, you know those things, but you can't assume. We make those of us who operate in the world of Twitter, we make this terrible assumption that everybody in the world is on Twitter, and they're just not. Now, I think if you want to talk about the power of Twitter, it's obviously very, very big. It's a good portion of the reason. Good portion of the reason that I think Donald Trump got elected, right? But the percentage of U.S. adults who use Twitter as of February of this year, right? 18 to 29, 42%. 30 to 49, 27%. 50 to 64, this is Belichick's age bracket, 18%, and 65 plus, 7%. Now, that's people that are on Twitter. That doesn't actually mean they use it. Hey, Twitter has 60, as of 2 years ago, there were 68 million active users, but only 37 million actually used it. So the point is that only about half the people that are actually on social media use social media daily or even weekly. So the numbers are far different. It's a lot like we assume, and I assume, everybody watches the Super Bowl. It's a fair assumption, right? Here's the only problem. If 150 to 175 million people watch Super Bowl, and there's 350 million people in the United States, what the hell are the other 200 million people doing? They're not watching the Super Bowl. But we assume everybody does because you're in sports. It's a smaller spectrum and there's a higher percentage. But when you make the assumption that everybody watches social media and everybody cares about it, Belichick's like, nah, not really. And that's honestly a great way to live your life. You cannot live your life, plan your day or plan your show, run your administration based upon what social media says. Social media is wildly and crazily overreactive. Ooh, you got ratioed. So? You can get 100,000 people to agree with you on social media. It doesn't mean that the rest of the world cares or agrees with you. That's all it is. Like, it's all grandstanding. Most people are just grandstanding. Let's go Ramos, then Jay Stu. Ramos, what you got?
I agree with you, by the way, about the whole social media. But don't you think, though, it does still make a lot of play? I mean, it does make people change and think and do different things, even if it is a very small minority of the big picture.
Right. Yes. Yes. I would say there's a couple things. Here's what it's cool for. It's cool because it's the easiest way to, like, oh my God, Pat Mahomes is watching the same game that I'm watching. Right. Remember when he's watching the Sunday night game when he's just, what is happening here? It's the Monday night game. You're like, wow, Pat Mahomes watching the exact same game I'm watching. LeBron James watching the exact same game. That part is cool where you get somebody's, but the, honestly, it's all of the civilians, the replies, which are just so bizarre. I'll never forget, like, anytime somebody doesn't like something I tweet, then they either, one, go back to Notre Dame credit card thing, which is 26 years old, or two, curse me out. And you're like, okay, you didn't like what I said, so you think that being highly offensive and using reprehensible language, but somehow that's okay. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. I look at Twitter and social media just like Jerry Sloan talked about fans. The second you listen to them, you'll probably become one. Yes, Jay Stu, what do you got?
I was just going to bring up the point that CBS show, The Activist, they were going to have this, like, kind of survivor thing where the best activist wins a bunch of money. And the social media reaction was so negative that they have canceled the original idea and they're going with something else. So, like,
What was the idea? It was called The Activist.
And I remember they announced it like a couple weeks ago. And basically, you just have people competing for who could be the better social activist. And you're like voting people off every week and stuff. And like they announced it and they showed a teaser and it just got bombarded with negativity online. And it changed the way they're going to do it. So in that regard, I mean, obviously Bill Belichick doesn't play into this, but in that respect, social media can be a great barometer.
I mean, I think that's on companies. If you massively overreact to social media and you're running a company, then you're not doing your job. You're just not. You gotta. People just wake up looking for something to be offended by. I know I've worked at that place, and I would say that place specifically is wildly and completely overreactive to social media. You know, here's one with the whole Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers and hosting Jeopardy. Like, oh, Aaron Rodgers, he could host Jeopardy. Like, he wasn't hosting Jeopardy. Like, that was a great ratings stunt, and it worked. But he's not hosting Jeopardy. It's not a job that he's going to leave the NFL for or even be able to do both. But if you looked on social media, it's like, oh, man, this is a legit choice for him. Like, no, it's not. If they wanted Aaron Rodgers, they would have offered Aaron Rodgers the job the second he got done doing Jeopardy.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Steve Palazzolo joins us, Pro Football Focus senior analyst. And Steve, let's start with last night. Daniel Jones, a guy who, like to get good Lord, giveth and then taketh away, right? Where are we on, how did he grade out with last night's performance?
He actually graded out really well. I thought Daniel Jones had a very good game. I mean, the Darius Slayton drop, it may be just out of his reach. It should have been caught, though. So the Giants should have been up two scores in the fourth quarter. Daniel Jones hits that down the left sideline, drops it in a bucket. Beautiful throw. I thought he made some nice plays under pressure. I know they were talking about the offensive line playing better last night, maybe a little bit in the second half, but he's still under pressure a ton. I haven't really changed my tune on Daniel Jones. I think he's a guy, if you put a pristine environment around him, he can produce a little bit. I compared him to Nick Foles coming out. I think you've got some high-end play. He's willing to play under pressure, which leads to just a lot of volatility, some bad, some good. I think that's the case with Daniel Jones, and we'll see if we can get a good read on him. You know, again, the Giants should have won that game. Daniel Jones played a good game. But behind this offensive line, we might not get a great read on him this year because they are definitely still having some problems in pass protection.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Taylor Heinicke. Now, look, he looked good against Tampa, running around back there making plays. He looked pretty good last night. Do you think this is sustainable?
Man, he's got that. You know, we spend all of our time at PFF quantifying every play and, you know, quantifying the film study. And I'm going to defer to he's got this it factor. I'm just going to say he's got it. He's got this intangible. And I think there's something to it, right? I mean, I did watching that game, I really didn't have much of a doubt that he was going to put them in the field goal range at the end there. And again, whether it's kicked or not, you know, it's not on him. But, I think Heinicke, he's aggressive. He makes up for, I don't think he's got a great arm. It's very Fitzpatrick-like. He doesn't have a great arm, but he throws with anticipation. He did show a good arm in that Ricky Seals-Jones touchdown along the sideline. That was impressive. Again, it's tough to say it's completely sustainable, but I think at the very least, he deserves a shot to see if he could be a starter. And if Washington found a steal, and I think you look at Heinicke and he could be a mid-tier NFL quarterback, which is valuable, especially when you're kind of coming out of nowhere. So I can't wait to see more Heinicke because, yeah, the playoff appearance last year was impressive. I thought he was impressive last night, and he bounced back from an interception that wasn't really on him. Bad route. Terry McLaurin got knocked off. It made it look bad. So I think Heinicke played a really good game last night.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Obviously, it was bad for Aaron Rodgers, right? I mean, it was bad. How much of an outlier was last weekend's performance?
Yeah, so it's funny because it happened in week one. So when it happens in week one, it's a different narrative. It's like, well, you know, blame Jeopardy and blame the drama and this and that. But this has happened, you know, using PFF terms, we grade on a 0 to 100 scale, and Rodgers has graded under 50, which is terrible, four times now since 2016. He's had four of these horrible games. So it's happened before. And in the other three instances, he came back the next week and threw exactly four touchdowns and no interceptions. So he has a history of bouncing back. He also has a history of having these duds, right? And it wasn't just him. The entire Packers team was demoralized. I mean, they couldn't stop the run, couldn't stop the pass, couldn't get open. Everything was bad. We'll learn a lot on Monday night. I do think Rodgers bounces back. I think he'll be fine, especially against the Lions. That'll help a lot. But if there are struggles, then the narrative changes a little bit. Yeah, maybe the offseason, maybe all that stuff did add up or whatever. I think he'll be fine. I'm not worried about it because this doesn't happen often, but it's happened at least a handful of times over the last few years as far as Rodgers having a really bad game like that.
Are you a buyer into the new and improved Jameis Winston?
I've always been a Jameis believer, so I'll have to say yes.
Are you a believer? Are you a believer and a believer or just a Jameis believer?
Just a Jameis believer.
I just want to make sure. I just want to clear up somebody's driving. Did Steve Palazzolo say he's a believer? I was like, I don't know. I heard Jameis.
The believer. B and the V sometimes sound similar, right? I get it. Just Jameis here. And it's because, again, an aggressive quarterback, he sometimes hits the high end of that volatility. And Jameis is an aggressive quarterback. And there's still more to see here. But if Sean Payton can reel in the bad, and still put Jameis in position to be aggressive down the field. He didn't have to do a ton on Sunday, right? I mean, they ran the ball like crazy. He made some beautiful throws in the red zone, had the bomb for a touchdown late, which didn't matter much. But a couple preseason throws, he looked good. You add up last week. So I think the mesh of Winston and Sean Payton's off to a great start. Still want to see more. Still want to see if we can have the avoid those three interception games. But, man, very impressive. And this is just, you know, Sean Payton's resume. Drew Brees is awesome, but man, without Drew Brees, Sean Payton has done a lot with Teddy Bridgewater, with Taysom Hill, with Jameis Winston, and he just continues Payton to show that he can dial up some offense.
He absolutely can. All right, let's get to some of the young quarterbacks, especially the rookies, because I think a lot of us, you know, unless it's your team, you're watching the highlights, you're watching some of the breakdowns, or you're watching on Red Zone. Let's begin with Trevor Lawrence. I think most of America saw the two picks and see them lose to the Texans, who we all think suck. But how did Trevor Lawrence actually play when you guys rated him out?
Yeah, the picks weren't great. I was more concerned. He actually had the highest percentage of uncatchable passes in the league last week. So there was some short area stuff that he just missed. And that's a bit of a concern. You got to clean that up. I'm not terribly worried about Trevor Lawrence's decision-making. It was poor on Sunday. You know, he didn't see cover two corners. He didn't see underneath linebackers. It was bad. But he also, in every game that he's played, preseason or regular season, he's made one or two really wow throws. I mean, there's a reason why he went number one overall. And I think the Andrew Luck comparisons as a prospect, I think, might carry over into their NFL development. Andrew Luck made special throws right from the get-go, but he was also turning the ball over like crazy. He was playing for Bruce Arians as a rookie, too, but Luck was turning the ball over like crazy, but he'd make up for it with some wow stuff. I think Lawrence might have some of those ups and downs early on. You'll see the wow. You'll see some bad decisions. You'll see some misses. But once he cleans that up, which I think he will, you know, Lawrence will continue to improve. But it wasn't the best first outing, though, for Trevor Lawrence.
No, it wasn't the best. Zach, same question, Zach Wilson.
Rough first half, another one. Blind spot for a linebacker, fumbles in the pocket, some ugly stuff. But second half showed off the arm talent, got out of the pocket on a couple plays. Again, I think he'll be fine. They got to protect him better with the Jets, though. He's under pressure a ton, quick pressure, too. Mekhi Becton being hurt at left tackle doesn't help. So if he's protected, I think Wilson will continue to develop. But he wasn't as crisp as he looked in the preseason. You know, the game looked a little bit quicker for him, especially in that first half.
Yeah, Justin Fields, I remember him talking about how slow it was the first preseason game. Then he gets clocked the second right. game. We haven't heard a word from him. All right, what about Fields and Lance? We've only seen them in bits and pieces. Anything jump out about either of their brief appearances in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just want to see the athleticism and arm talent play at the NFL level. It looks different college to NFL. And I'd say watching Lance in the preseason early on, he has an absolute cannon, maybe better than I thought. And I thought Fields, I know the joke about it looks slow and all that. His Fields' athleticism looks like it's going to play. Like, he looks like he's going to be plenty fast enough to get outside the pocket to make plays. So I think just physically they look as advertised. And that's a big thing sometimes to just see it on the field. We'll see. I mean, we'll see when they get out there. I think, you know, everybody's clamoring for Justin Fields. He does have to do a better job pre-snap recognition, getting rid of the ball. So I think that's why the Bears are protecting him at this point.
Okay. Mac Jones. It's his job. It's his team. A lot of people walking away with praise from Mac Jones. But what about you guys at Pro Football Focus?
Yeah, a lot of praise. After the first play, his first play, he looked scared. It was he threw the ball backwards. On purpose. He tried to spike it back. You know, that's called a fumble in football. So he fumbled on purpose, panicking in the pocket. After that, though, Mac Jones completely settled down. It was really impressive. They attacked the underneath area. I mean, he was facing unblocked blitzers. And again, there's a difference. Sometimes you get, like, Jalen Hurts was facing unblocked blitzers this week, and he would juke them and make a nice play. Mac Jones just stood in there and made throw after throw after throw, and it was really impressive. They only scored 16 points, but he put them in position for the game-winning field goal. He had four big-time throws by our standards, dropped one in on a wheel route, deep comeback, deep out, seam route. Mac Jones has shown it all, and he's passed every test so far. So definitely excited about what the Patriots have in Mac Jones. He was very impressive in this game and very impressive throughout preseason and training camp.
Yeah, I know we've talked a ton of quarterbacks, but a big point of emphasis for so many of these teams is offensive lines. I have questions about three offensive lines really quickly. Let me start with the Chargers. They rebuilt their offensive line. It's been a turnstile there, and they got the ball back with 6:40 to go and didn't punt, and you're going against the Washington defensive line that everybody thinks is, if not the best in the conversation, the best in the NFL. How did the Chargers offensive line grade out?
Fantastic. I mean, it's so much better, first of all. Rashawn Slater, their first round pick, was one of the better all around tackles in the entire league this week. But you just saw, they had Corey Lindsley at center. He was the one guy who got beat once or twice. Everyone else was pretty good. Ode Abushi, who they brought in. They have completely revamped that offensive line. It's still early, but we're talking about a team by our rankings, because we grade every player on every play. By our rankings, they're bottom five in pass protection every year. Whether Rivers was there, whether Herbert was there, right now they look like a far better offensive line. And so I think it's a game changer in, you know, with the Chargers, with that offensive line, if they can keep it up.
Okay. Same question with the Raiders. The Raiders completely remade their offensive line. They took on the Ravens, who it does feel like that defensive front's a little bit long in the tooth. That's why they're having to send people and go zero blitz. But how'd the Raiders' new offensive line fare?
So they ended up right about middle of the pack, maybe a little bit below average, which was about our expectations. They lost a lot of good players. I think center is still going to be a problem for them going forward. Alex Leatherwood at right tackle, he's a rookie, had some rough blocks in pass protection the other night. So I think they have a chance to be, you know, 15th to 20th in the league if a few guys improve a little bit. So I don't think it's going to be a strength. But they have a chance to make it not a disaster, which is important in today's NFL. You just don't want to have a disaster of an offensive line. And the Raiders at least look like they have that possibility this year.
All right. Last one is Kansas City Chiefs. They lost the Super Bowl because they couldn't block. They took on Cleveland's in the conversation of best defensive lines. They look. Let's just be honest. They're very fortunate. A big fumble, and then whatever you want to describe as the muffed punt helped them get back in that game. But how was Kansas City's offensive line?
Yeah, so it was middle of the pack for us. And I think the interesting narrative here is Patrick Mahomes has never played with an offensive line that was worse than 12th in our rankings. He just happened to play in a Super Bowl with a terrible offensive line because they were all hurt. But this new group, I mean, very impressive outing by two rookies, Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. Lucas Niang played right tackle. He's a super rookie. You know, last year he was a rookie, didn't really play though. I think they're going to be fine. I think they're going to be a potential top 10 unit. They got beat up a lot. Myles Garrett had his way with the tackles at times. And again, you mentioned the Browns have a really good defensive line. They added to it a lot this offseason, and you saw that. So the Chiefs got beaten a few times, but Mahomes is special even under pressure. And they were much better than they were in the Super Bowl. And I do think eventually they get to that top 10 tier as far as offensive lines go.
Awesome stuff, Steve. You guys do an amazing job. I really appreciate it. I feel smarter. I hope everybody else does from listening. Thanks so much for joining us on Fox Sports Radio.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Doug. Appreciate it.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week, we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get to a game.
Game time!
This is game time.
It's game time.
On the Doug Gottlieb
Game
Show.
Time is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Want to look like $1 million bucks, but only spend a handful of bucks, upgrade to Dollar Shave Club. Their 6-blade razor for a noticeably smooth shave. Thanks to their 6 precision-cut stainless steel blades, find your perfect shave with Dollar Shave Club in-stores. Yeah, that's Dollar Shave Club in-store. Go to dollarshaveclub.com if you want online. Go ahead, Isaac.
This particular game has won me a lot of money over the years.
Psychic.
All right, Psychic. Who will be the next NFL quarterback to get a big extension from their current team? I'm guessing you're not going to answer Taylor Heineke, but then again...
I'm going to go with the next NFL quarterback. I'll say it's Kyler Murray.
Interesting.
Kyler Murray for number one overall pick. Now, he's a year after Lamar and Baker, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're so tied to him. It's not that Baltimore doesn't want Lamar to get Lamar done. I think the Kyler will get done first.
And, of course, Lamar says he is negotiating by himself without the use of an agent, and that's not really logistically favorable during an actual NFL season. All right, Psychic, who's going to win the NFL's Defensive Rookie of the Year award this year? Among the contenders, Patrick Surtain, Micah Parsons, who we saw on opening night already starting with the Cowboys, Jamin Davis of Washington, and Jalen Phillips.
Micah Parsons, Penn State, stud, can really move, can run, can hit. And if you saw him play in his first game, you're like, that dog will hunt.
Well, psychic, great minds think alike, because that's what I thought, but I was waiting for you to confirm it. I'm making a phone call during our next timeout. Will an NFL head coach, psychic, be fired during the season? And if so, who among potential candidates? Matt Nagy, Mike Zimmer, Zach Taylor, and Vic Fangio. Of course, you were right earlier about Clay Helton when we asked you the college equivalent, but that was back in 2018 when we asked you.
Mm-hmm. I think all they will all survive. Nagy could be a guy at the end of the year that gets clipped. Zim the same. Zach Taylor, some people thought had lost kind of control of that deal, but how they played last week, the reinvigorated defense. He's done a good job with Burrow, and Vic Fangio. Vic Fangio can be a little prickly, but boy, he's a really good defensive coach. I think they all keep their jobs.
And finally, psychic, we switch from football to baseball. Who will win the American League Most Valuable Player Award among, obviously, the contenders, Shohei Ohtani. Geez, tell us what you really think. So
he's been the best pitcher in baseball since July 1st. They shut him down. He's in the conversation of best hitter in baseball. And last night, I believe he beat out a ground ball on the shift to second base. He runs, he pitches. He's doing historic stuff. I'm not saying it's not a question, because some of these other guys are great at what they do, but they do one thing.
All right. Well, I'll await the angry tweet from Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau about you ignoring Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
That's game, huh?
Game time.
This is game time on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is great. He's great. He's just not pitching as well as Ohtani is pitching. And the hitting might be slightly better, but doesn't make up for it.